As an expert, Brian, I want to ask you, what does a good headshot do in terms of creating a profile?
You know, it's a great question. So let me answer it two ways. One is from an individual perspective. So right now, you know, these are US statistics, but, you know, LinkedIn is a very powerful platform, right? And we all know that 300 plus million users across the country, I think maybe more across the world, maybe more than that, but everyone needs to have a profile photo, right? And LinkedIn has some amazing statistics that'll tell you headshot or profiles with a professional photo get 14 times more views, 36 times more messages. So literally the world is telling people that having a professional image for your profile photo is going to impact the amount of engagement that you get.
Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a vodcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. If you are new to our channel, please consider subscribing to it and hit the bell icon so that you never miss an update. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I am delighted and privileged to welcome a very, very accomplished individual from California, USA, Brian Confer. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ash. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Brian is the founder of Capturely. He's the founder of the Headshot Truck. He is an actor. And after 20 years of work, he's now pursuing his MBA. So, Brian, tell me about your journey from an actor to an entrepreneur.
It was a fun one. You know, I was a kid actor. Never very successful, to be honest with you. I was the one that almost got a lot of big roles, but just never did. And that's okay. They went to Macaulay Culkin or Devon Sawa or one of these other big actors, and that's all right. But I was the son of an entrepreneur. My dad was a graphic artist and designer, and in the ad agency world in the 60s. So he was, when you see Mad Men, he was one of those types. And before I was born, he created his own advertising and marketing firm and worked from home. And so I had the opportunity to be able to learn a lot from him. And although I was really excited about being an actor and pursuing that, I always had this foundation of sales, marketing, advertising, entrepreneurship. And, but when I moved to California, 17, 18 years ago, I was pursuing my dreams of being an actor, and it was a very, it was a struggle, trying to have control of my own career and, be successful. And as most actors do, we had a day job, right? And my day job was in sales and marketing. I worked for an e-learning company and promoting online degree programs specifically for working adults. And that was my day job. And I was fortunate enough to have some success in that world. And it really kind of put me to a point where I was trying to decide what I wanted to do with my life. And at the time, acting, because I didn't have a lot of control in my career, it wasn't as fulfilling. I wasn't able to accomplish the kind of things that I wanted to in my life. And so when that job ended, I spent 10 years in that corporate world in the learning space. I owned a home in LA and I was married, and I decided I never want to work for anyone else again. So I sold my home. I cashed out my 401k. I never recommend anyone do this, but I did. And I decided to create a startup. I said, I want to just jump into this world and spend the next few years with the money I have to be able to put it into whatever that next venture is. And I had a couple of, you know, failed attempts, but ultimately I ended up founding the Headshot Truck, which is a mobile photography studio. And of course, here in LA, we have a lot of actors that need headshots. So that was kind of my bridge, was knowing that we had enough actors in LA that might respond to it. So that could be our base level of revenue. But I knew that I wanted to expand more into the corporate world with it. And that's what we did. So I was able to use my acting and my background, but then also bridge it into the corporate world to try to make that successful.
So, being behind a camera, from being in front of a camera, you decided to move behind a camera.
I did. Yeah. I moved behind the camera and, you know, I love producing. Mm-hmm. And so I was behind the camera, but as you know, this brand, you need someone to also be in front of the camera representing the brand. So I knew that I could use my skills and talents as an actor, as being comfortable being in front of the camera, mm-hmm. to be the face of the brand, the voice of the brand moving forward. So I was able to kind of use those skills and talents to be able to do that, but still working behind the camera as well in terms of running the business.
Fantastic. So Brian, tell me, you know, I've been a startup entrepreneur several times. You're a startup entrepreneur. What were some of your challenges as you started to build the headshot truck, and then we'll come to Capture Lee?
Yeah, you know, you don't know what you don't know. That's mm-hmm. that was a big challenge, right? Is trying to survive and thrive without having the fundamental knowledge of an MBA or anything along those lines. And so it was a lot of trial and error. It was a lot of learning by, you know, trial by fire, learning the hard way. We had some challenges with partners. I can tell you that I started a company with four partners, and having a partner is difficult. You know, it's like dating, right? You don't know until you kind of get into it. So there was challenges on the partner side. A big challenge was financing, right? Getting revenue, getting an investment as a bootstrap startup, right? Without any money, we're trying to start small and grow. So we definitely had those challenges of not having any institutional money or not having any investment, growing to a point where we had a valuation strong enough to acquire an investment and an investor. And we also had a challenge of trying to figure out how to grow and how to expand. And we faltered with that, right? I would say, like, definitely learn some lessons on when and how to grow or expand and when timing is right. And so a lot of those things were a challenge, trying to create it one way long enough to survive until you could have revenues strong enough to grow.
Amazing. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about the headshot truck. My question to you is, why only headshots? Was this because of a specific need of Hollywood?
It's a great question. So with actors, headshots are very important, right? Having a professional headshot or your actor submissions is great. And this was also in the time that LinkedIn was growing, right? This was in 2010, 2014, when we saw LinkedIn growing, a lot of these HR platforms, email signatures. People were using professional headshots mm-hmm. for a wider variety of reasons. And so I saw it as an opportunity to be able to provide that professional photo that represents you, your brand, but also might represent the company brand. And so initially, we were able to acquire some really great clients. We shot the headshots, employee headshots for NBC, Fox, Netflix, a lot of the big entertainment brands out here in LA, because they liked our style. They thought it was interesting. It kind of spoke to their brand. Mm-hmm. And the headshot truck itself was really neat because it was a mobile studio. It was a fun experience. So we started out in headshots really just knowing that that would be a way in, with always with the understanding that eventually we would grow our product line into more than just headshots.
Interesting. And tell me about Capture.ly. What is the difference between Capture.ly and the headshot truck?
So the headshot truck is a physical mobile studio, and we tried to expand in New York City and Atlanta and some other markets, but it's very difficult to do that. You know, New York City is a difficult city. There's weather there. So there are limitations. But our corporate clients really loved our product and our service. And they would ask us, can you come up into our office and take headshots? Can you shoot in other markets? And so it came out of, Capture.ly came out of realizing that our clients were telling us, we want something where you can come into our studio, or our office rather, take headshots and have them be consistent across the United States for our brand. Mm-hmm. And so recognizing this need, we said, all right, let's move away from this truck model that has its limitations. Let's expand where we can have contracted photographers and videographers in other markets that can still shoot our style specifically, but be able to do it without a truck. And so Capsule was born out of this idea of knowing that we have a great list of corporate clients. They want us to shoot in other markets. Let's expand the corporate side of the business to be more about that, that larger brand conversation and opportunity. And so that's how Capsule was born, was initially to be able to shoot headshots for companies across the country. And we also shot a lot of headshots for conferences and conventions. So that was a big piece of our revenue pre-COVID, was in large groups and conferences and conventions. But boy, COVID changed things with that, I tell you what.
That's true. But again, you know, I've always been very fascinated when I used to work for large American companies. There was a lot of focus on getting the right photographs for leadership teams. That doesn't seem to happen in most other parts of the world. I mean, if you were sitting in India, if you were to say, send me a photograph, I'll probably send you a passport photograph, which is good enough. As an expert, Brian, I want to ask you, what does a good headshot do in terms of creating a profile?
You know, it's a great question. So let me answer it two ways. One is from an individual perspective. So right now, you know, these are US statistics, but, you know, LinkedIn is a very powerful platform, right? And we all know that 300 plus million users across the country, I think maybe more or across the world, maybe more than that. But everyone needs to have a profile photo, right? And LinkedIn has some amazing statistics that'll tell you. Headshot or profiles with a professional photo get 14 times more views, 36 times more messages. So literally the world is telling people that having a professional image for your profile photo is going to impact the amount of engagement that you get. And so if you're someone who's looking for a new opportunity, looking to get a job somewhere, that photo, that profile is an opportunity. It is your new business card. It is the welcome mat to your life and your resume and all the things that you want to tell people. So of course you want to represent yourself as a professional. And when so many people are applying for jobs, the same job, thousands of people are often applying for a job. Sometimes the differentiator can be, okay, let me look at this person's profile and see, first thing you see is that photo. And if you don't see something professional, you may move on to the next person. So it's a small investment that could yield very large results. So at an individual level, that's what it means. Now, from a corporate level, most of the clients that people work with, you've got your company branding and you've got your employer branding, right? So company branding is customer facing. It's once on your website. A lot of customers, this, I know this is in the US, but it may be worldwide. They want to know who they're dealing with, who is the team behind this product or service, and having a professional image that's consistent and on brand will be really important. In fact, the About Us page, the About the Team, the Meet the Team, whatever you call that, it's the second most viewed page on your website, second most beside your homepage. So it's people are saying, I want to go to this page and I want to see who I'm dealing with. So on the company branding, that's the thing. And then on the employer branding side, you think about what is it like to work for this company? Who is this company? Who are the employees that work there? And so from a recruiting perspective, a lot of recruiters are looking at professional headshots and that sort of thing as employee engagement, as a way to represent their team, as a way to show their team unity, part of the team. And it's becoming a great engagement tool from an employer branding perspective now. Wow. So it's usable in a wide variety of ways.
Amazing. I had no idea that the About Us page is the second most viewed page on a website. Incredible.
That's incredible, right? I didn't know either, right? We just started figuring this out, but that's why we feel like this is so impactful.
Absolutely. So Brian, you also transitioned to video content. Tell me about this and maybe give me an example.
So photo content is grown exponentially over the years. You know, people are using photo content for website, of course, social media, internal communications, a wide variety of things. But content, video content is king now in the 2020, 2020 world and 21 world and beyond. And for marketing, I think it's like 85% of the content viewed is video. So from a marketing and sales perspective, consumers are telling us as businesses that we should be using video to connect and engage with them. And so we realized this, like we provided photos for a long time. Great. It's important. There's no doubt. But having top, middle, and bottom funnel content in terms of video has grown so much. And so what we did is we took ourselves from focusing on headshots to then expanding into business imagery and video, and basically rounding out all of the photo and video asset needs that you might need as a brand to complement your sales, marketing, and HR efforts on both the company and the employer branding side. And so we've worked with a number of different brands now to do photo and video content. These are SMBs and enterprise, right? SMBs need it for their website, for their social. You need to put a lot of content out there. And so it's important that that content be professional and usable on a wide variety of platforms. So that's why we made that change, just seeing how the market was responding.
Very interesting. So now let me move to the next segment of our conversation, which are a few questions for you as a startup entrepreneur. You did mention that you started with four partners, and then, you know, it's always difficult to manage partners. My question to you, and I've often been asked this by a lot of our listeners, is it better to do a startup alone or go with co-founders?
Boy, it's a great question. I wish I had a simple answer that was always the truth, right? You know, I think it depends, and I hate to say it depends, but, you know, it depends on your skill set, right? Like, I know for us, I represented the sales and marketing side, but I was not a photographer. And so I needed a photographer and an expert photographer to be a part of that side of things. And also, I wasn't a finance and accounting person. So I needed someone who could represent that side. And oftentimes now with e-commerce and technology, if you're not a tech person, you can't build websites and you don't have the revenue to hire a full stack developer to do it, then that's when having a co-founder or multiple co-founders makes sense, as long as you can all be aligned in the company vision, values, what you're trying to accomplish. But if you have the ability to start small, particularly with e-commerce, we're seeing this a lot in the e-commerce space. So if you have a product or service that you can create yourself, now the barrier to entry is very, very low. Like you can enter the market. If you've got a bit of a budget for your ad revenue or putting it out there on Etsy or whatever that might be, you don't have to have any co-founders or partners. So I think it depends on what the product or service is. It depends on how fast you want to grow.
Okay.
But I wish there was a simple answer.
I agree with you.
That's what I'm seeing.
Thank you. My next question to you, and this is a question I ask a lot of startup founders, what, in your opinion, Brian, are some of the basic mistakes a lot of startup founders make?
Well, that's a great question. A big mistake that we made was expanding too fast, too quickly, not gaining traction in one market and then growing organically. I think we all want to be rich quick, right? And it's very difficult to do that. It's very difficult to scale appropriately, if you will, right? You want to grow fast, but there can be, you want to have a really solid foundation. It's way better to grow slowly than it is to try to create a really tall building that can fall over. So I think, you know, being careful on growing too quickly, understanding how much money that you actually need in order to get your skier out of the water, right? If the boat is moving very slowly, your skier is still in the water and you've got your head above. But if you have enough revenue and you have enough traction to really hit the gas, now your skier can get out of the water and you're rolling. So understanding what that balance is with the revenue side, those are some mistakes. And then making sure that the partners that you have, if you do have co-founders, have the appropriate skill sets. It's about having the right team in the right seats, meaning the right, you know, position within the business. And then also that they're as driven within the business as you are. Some people aren't, and that's okay. But you just have to have some honest conversations. So I think like having those honest conversations, making sure that people are in the right seats at the right time, that you're not trying to grow too quickly if it doesn't make sense, and making sure you have enough money in order to get that skier out of the water.
Interesting. I love your example of the ski out of the water. So, Brian, I'm going to now move to the last segment of our conversation, which is a few questions for you personally. You know, you've seen so much in life, you know, from acting to building businesses to, you know, doing your MBA now. What are some of the core values you have, Billy? Oh, there you are, your MBA program. What are some of the core values you have believed in as you've built businesses?
I appreciate the question, and it's important. I think honesty is really important. I think self-reflection, being able to really accept constructive criticism and see who you are and where you need to go. I think so many of us as entrepreneurs can get very defensive and not see the forest through the trees or accept constructive criticism. So I think being able to be vulnerable in that space is really important. Trusting my gut has been a value of mine. Mm-hmm. And a big one is education, is learning. Sure. You know, learning is so, so important. And if you think you know it all, I think that's a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. And being open and willing to learn and constantly in search of growing, mm-hmm. Both personally, professionally, spiritually, if you will, those are my core values. Being able to be willing to grow and learn in all aspects of my life has been a strong suit of mine. And I would say commitment and compassion. Right. Those are two things that are really important in terms of my success is being committed to what it is that I'm doing, being compassionate to others that I'm involved with, and being passionate myself in terms of what I want to accomplish.
Wonderful. My next question to you is that from where you stand today, and you've done so many different things, what does success mean to Brian?
That's a great question. You know, years ago, I might have said there was a dollar value attached to success. Yep. And I think I've changed that viewpoint over years. You know, I think now I want to do great things. I want to be able to help people. I want to be able to make an impact, a social impact. And I want to be able to work with people that I love and respect and want to work with. Because at the end of the day, I've realized that spending time with the team every day, you have to work with people you love. And so success for me is working with people that you appreciate and admire and respect, that also admire and respect and appreciate you, and having an impact socially, doing things that don't just help me personally, but help the world. If I'm able to do those things every day, and at the end of the day, my company is helping to grow and expand and help people that in a macro way, that's success for me.
What an answer. And a follow-up question to that is that who or what inspires you?
Boy, I tell you, you know, there's a lot of things that inspire me, but being able to meet with other entrepreneurs, leaders in the industry, and hearing their stories and getting to feel connected to them emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and realize that we're all connected. Mm-hmm. That's very inspiring to me, you know, sort of like shared value towards reaching a common good, incredibly inspirational. But I tell you what, you know, I'm inspired daily by the people that I get to work with. And I don't mean just my employees that work with me, but I mean our clients, because when I get to talk to a client that says, you know, I struggled for a long time to find a job and I wasn't sure what it was. And they come and they realize, you know what, maybe I'll update my professional headshot from my LinkedIn. And all of a sudden they get something that makes them feel good about themselves. It shows in that photo. And then the snowball effect that happens from that is very inspirational, because people achieving their dreams and doing things that make them feel good about themselves, that really helps me get out of bed every day feeling good about what I do. It's so inspiring, you know?
Fabulous, fabulous. And my last question to you now, and Brian, this is a question on failure. From the part of the world that I come from, I've often said parents don't teach children it's okay to fail. We're always told come first in class and go to the head of the line, etc. Yet we fail and we learn. My question to you is what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes?
Boy, you learn the most from your mistakes, I think. You know, I agree with you where so often society punishes us for mistakes. And I think we need to embrace it because the reality is that's the best way to learn. And I've made some personal mistakes, some decisions I've made within my professional life that have affected other people personally. Made some mistakes in having blind spots that I couldn't see the forest through the trees, and all of a sudden it led to some negative outcomes. Mm-hmm. But it's also cost me a lot of time and money.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? I'm grateful for those mistakes because I wouldn't have learned the way I have. I wouldn't be pursuing my MBA. I wouldn't have this feeling about what fills me up and makes me feel good about myself and the things that I'm doing in my life had I not had those mistakes of making poor decisions, of losing money, of burning bridges without realizing that I was. But I'm grateful for them. I really am. And it's important. It's important to be able to make those mistakes and learn from them and feel okay. Like it's part of the journey. Making mistakes is part of the journey. If you're not making mistakes, then ultimately I don't think you're going to get where you need to go. Failure is part of life.
Very well said. Brian, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I mean, I've learned such amazing things from you today, whether it's about LinkedIn or how important that headshot is. Thank you again. And I look forward to staying in touch.
Oh, thank you, Ash. Appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.